91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's an At Your Service edition with labor and employment law attorney Donna Baldwin. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper with you. She's also a Supreme Court certified civil mediator and an arbitrator for employment disputes. How will current efforts to cut wide segments of regulation be felt in the workplace? Or what about areas of worker rights, gender identity, and immigrant workers? Another consideration, would employees on medical cannabis treatment be subject to getting the boot for failing or refusing a drug test? We'll be taking your calls next at 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. First up, news. Joseph Cooper with today's topical currents. Bonnie Berman has the day off. We hope you had an enjoyable and safe holiday weekend. So we're at your service today with topical currents contributor Donna Baldwin. You've probably heard her before. She's a Fort Lauderdale-based attorney who represents employees in many areas, including discrimination, harassment, disabilities, wage theft, family and medical leaves, non-compete agreements, whistleblower cases, and many other categories. She has mediation and arbitration experience as well. Welcome back to you, Donna Baldwin.
Thanks for having me back.
Depending on how the Congress either revokes, supplants, or amends the Affordable Care Act, are there any choices that, say, particularly low earners or non-insured workers can try and protect themselves with?
Well, the first thing I'm telling people, because the Affordable Care Act, I have to say, has been a real lifesaver, probably literally for people who lose their jobs, because it used to be that you could only choose COBRA.
Right.
COBRA,
which was expensive.
Well, COBRA, you're paying, I think it's 105% of what your employer paid. Most people can't afford that. So when people lost their jobs, they were going bare. And then the Affordable Care Act came in, and it did two things. It covered people who had pre-existing conditions. They couldn't deny you coverage. And it also provided people with a really affordable option. So I always told people, go and look at the gold and platinum level plans, not those cheap bronze plans. Try to find something similar to what your employer is offering for COBRA, and compare apples to apples. And Affordable Care Act is almost always coming up cheaper. So for people who lost their jobs, you need cheaper. And so a lot of people were getting coverage that way. Well, so now what I'm telling people is this. If the Affordable Care Act is repealed, you're going to lose pre-existing condition coverage, or it's going to be so crazy expensive that you're not going to be able to afford it. So I'm telling people, you do not want to have a gap in coverage right now if you have a pre-existing condition.
So an example could be, say, type 1 diabetes.
Yes. If you have any kind of pre-existing condition, you want to make sure you get coverage if you can. Find the best plan you can get on, whether through Affordable Care Act or COBRA, and get on it. So that's number one. You don't want to lose that pre-existing condition coverage. So let's assume that Affordable Care Act eventually goes away, is phased out or something. People who have low income, no income, very low income, you'll probably still be able to get on Medicaid. But there's the people in the middle, your just normal middle class folks are really getting the brunt of this thing because they won't have any options that are affordable to them. A lot of states have actually increased Medicaid coverage so that people could get that gap insurance.
But not Florida.
Florida did not. But still, there were a lot of things that you could get under the Affordable Care Act that could help you, and plus just getting more affordable coverage. So there aren't going to be a lot of options. So you're going to want to look at, you know, do you qualify for Medicaid? Do you qualify for Medicare? Otherwise, people are going to be back to going to the emergency rooms. Their emergency rooms can't turn you down for emergencies, whether or not you have insurance. So, and that was what was happening before the Affordable Care Act, is a lot of people just did all their medical care at emergency rooms. Well, that costs us as taxpayers a lot more. So it's going to be very expensive, and it literally was costing people their lives. I would have people who knew they had cancer who said, I just can't go to the doctor. And I would say, at least go to emergency rooms and get, you know, get some treatment. And they just didn't do it. So a lot of people were just not getting the medical care they needed.
How about the concept of portability? Will that still be around?
It's hard to say.
Meaning that if you change jobs, you can take your insurance with you.
It's hard to say what's... Well, COBRA's still going to exist. So if you really want to keep that insurance under COBRA, you can. But then if you've got... A new employer that has insurance coverage, that COBRA coverage is dropped as soon as you're covered under the new employer's plan. So it's sort of portable, but not that portable in that it ends as soon as you've got coverage under your new employer. So you're going to lose that. It's hard to say what's going to happen with it at this point. We don't know. It seems to be kind of stalled right now. It looks like eventually something will be repealed. We don't know what parts. Almost certainly pre-existing condition coverage will be either lost or so crazy expensive that it won't be affordable for people.
Again, our telephone number, we're in our at-your-service mode today on Topical Currents. Our telephone number, if you have a question or a comment of attorney Donna Ballman, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email radio@WLRN.org. So to sum up, Donna, if you're in the position where you can't afford any insurance at all, the best thing to do is try and take the best care of yourself and, if necessary, go to the emergency room and see what can come of that.
Yeah, emergency rooms still have to take you, so whether or not you have insurance, and there are public hospitals that do cover for, and there are clinics and things, although those are getting cut back too. Things like Planned Parenthood that were providing free or affordable care are getting cut back, but there are clinics. So I would say start doing your homework now. Start looking for the clinics near you. Look for hospitals that are government funded that will take low-income people. Look at those emergency rooms that have to take you. And know what your options are before you lose that coverage.
Now, if you can't afford regular treatment, you go to the emergency room and you're almost indigent or something, I suppose those charges then will be reflected on your credit rating.
Yes, it does. And of course, we've talked about this on the show in the past. Employers can discriminate against you due to having bad credit. So when a bad credit will show up in a background check frequently. And you can be discriminated against for having bad credit because employers assume that somebody who is in debt might steal from them. And that's legal in Florida. There are a lot of states where it's not legal to discriminate based on a credit history, but it is legal in Florida. So it's kind of a vicious cycle in that you get in a worse and worse situation. You can't get a job because of bad credit. You lost your job, so you got bad credit, and it gets worse. So Affordable Care Act was a nice, and still is, it still exists, guys, so get that coverage while you can.
And so also, if you have to turn to, if you have a sick kid and you have to put things on credit cards, you're going to really hurt your credit there if you can't pay those off and be subject to very high interest rates.
Yes, exactly. You know, and bankruptcy, also a bad option. It stays on your credit even longer. And there are some laws protecting employees from discrimination due to bankruptcy, but not potential employees. It's complicated, but I'm telling you that bad credit stuff will come back and bite you. Not only in the wallet, but in your job.
Our telephone number, again, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. This seems like a good place to mention that today's program with attorney Donnie Ballman is for general interest purposes only, and we're not giving any specific legal advice to listeners, so that counts as a disclaimer, correct?
Yes, yes. So if you need legal advice, definitely go to an employee side employment lawyer. But we aren't handling people's specific cases. And please don't say something on the air. I shouldn't have to tell you this, but don't say something on the air that you don't want your employer to know about because, of course, you're on the air and it's not confidential.
Very good. Let's turn to the issue that a lot of religious freedom legislation is very active in the states these days. And how can that affect employee relations, particularly in the LGBT area?
Well, the religious freedom legislation and some executive orders that are coming down, basically the idea is to allow employers and landlords and all kinds of people, businesses, people to discriminate against others due to religious beliefs.
Well, by saying, my religion doesn't recognize you, I cannot have you employed because of my religious beliefs.
And there are some laws that would allow physicians to turn down patients if they are LGBT. I mean, it's pretty nasty stuff. And I was just at the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta, and they're playing recordings of people who are talking about race back in the 50s and 60s, and some of the things that they're saying about special rights and stuff are very very similar to what's being said about gays right now. But the thing about this is, okay, let's assume we pass laws saying that you're allowed to discriminate against LGBT people because of your religious beliefs. Well, that will also open the door to sex discrimination. For instance, there are many religions who think that women should be subservient to husbands, who should stay home and not work, who should cover themselves in certain areas. So will that be allowed? And then it can cut both ways. What if someone forms a religion, and there are actually some religions now that say that, you know, well, it's against my religion, and it's a sin to discriminate. It's a sin to, you know, not help the poor. And so it would allow people who hold opposite political beliefs from the ones that they're intending to predict.
I'm being denied this position because of my religion.
Yeah, so you can say, you know, let's say that there's a religion that says that discrimination against LGBT people is against that religion. It's a sin. So somebody could refuse to hire somebody because they hold an opposite religion that says that that kind of discrimination is mandatory in that religion. So we're going to, I don't know, what are we going to do? Religious wars, or everybody's going to have to do a religious litmus test to get a job. It would open it up to so many problems. And, you know, we're supposed to have separation of church and state. I don't think it's something that people should be getting into. Up until now, it's been illegal to discriminate against people based on race, sex, religion, national origin, things like that, and employment. And that should remain the same. Religion was an excuse for race discrimination for many years. People cited biblical reasons, certainly, for sex discrimination. So in my view, it shouldn't be opening the door to allow people to say, well, my religion says otherwise, because then we're going to have to vet everyone's religion, and the courts are going to do nothing but be hearing religious discrimination cases, and, oh, it's a defense to my discrimination case because my religion says I'm allowed to discriminate against you. It kind of circumvents the whole point.
I believe there's still restroom battles going on in North Carolina. What kind of effect could that have in the workplace?
You know, the North Carolina stuff seems to have settled down. I believe the bathroom laws have been mostly repealed, and Florida, thank goodness, this year didn't attempt to pass one. So there were the issue about the bathroom bills is that they're trying to pass laws saying that you have to go and use the restroom that is of the gender that's on your birth certificate. So are we really going to be checking people's birth certificates when they use the men's rooms or the ladies' room? And my concern was always, okay, so you've got somebody who's transgender, who's gone through a sex change or is in the process of a sex change. They look for all intents and purposes like a female, but you're going to make them use the men's room. Or vice versa. You're going to have people who very much look like very manly men with beards and everything that are forced to use the ladies' room. Your customers are going to be freaking out. Coworkers are going to be freaking out. I don't see how this helps anyone. Let people go where they want to go. So Florida didn't do that. They tried it last year, but not this year. It didn't pass. North Carolina's getting rid of that. And I think people are realizing just how silly these laws are, because it's never been a problem. It's never been an issue. Why all of a sudden is it an issue? It's just a political football.
It's Topical Currents at your service with attorney Donna Ballman. We'll be taking a short break and be right back. And we're back. It's today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper with Donna Baldwin. She's a Fort Lauderdale-based attorney who represents employees in many areas. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, once again, 1-800-743-9576. We have a couple of lines open. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email might be quicker, radio@WLRN.org. First caller, we have Vicki in Miami. Vicki, go ahead. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call and addressing this very important issue. It's hard to plan ahead. For me, being 2 years until Medicare, I can no longer work as of last year because I have a pre-existing condition. I now have to pay for a health savings account, which is fortunate because I'm accepted with the pre-existing condition. I'm wondering if there are any other states that are offering a health care plan, as Massachusetts did some years ago. I'm considering moving, looking for a friendlier state. How would you address this age tax issue?
Well, there are definitely friendlier states for employees and the disabled, and certainly states that have health care. I guess the issue would be you'd have to do some careful research because there are probably some residency requirements that you can't just move there and immediately get coverage. You probably have to have resided a certain length of time. So I would research that. But I'm sure there are more friendly states than Florida. A lot of states that have Affordable Care Act did up the Medicaid coverage so that more people could get that Medicaid coverage, and also have supplements that people are getting to allow them to afford that insurance. So if you're covered now, you may be able to transfer, but that's something you really need to research carefully before you make a move.
Right. Florida, when you said Florida and North Carolina did not accept the federal funding for Medicaid, that put that other issue in mind. It's like, well, where can we go if we can't be covered where we are? And thank you for that.
You're welcome. Well, good luck, and I hope you find a friendly state that did increase their Medicaid coverage.
I think a lot of people in my age bracket will, you know, I'm assuming, why would they move to Florida when we don't have anything in place for them? Just a thought.
Do some thank research. You. Yep. That's smart.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for your call. Donna Baldwin, give the rules on non-compete clauses as they stand now. What's legal and what's not? I know there's instances of fast food workers being unemployed because they might have some kind of proprietary way of dipping French fries in the oil or something.
Well, what you've seen is a movement among states, not Florida, to try to clamp down on non-competes, which can be very abusive. The non-compete agreements we're seeing more and more, and it used to be for people who were high-wage earners who actually did have access to trade secrets, but Jimmy John's was one that brought to the national attention a couple of years ago the abuse of non-competes when they were having their sandwich makers sign non-competes. Non-competes are for the purpose of not preventing competition, but for protecting legitimate interests such as trade secrets, confidential information. And so your employer is not supposed to be using it just to enslave you and force you to stay. They're not supposed to be using it just to keep you from going to work for a competitor. Those would be illegal reasons. Those violate antitrust. They have to have a legitimate reason. Now, Florida is very tough on employees when it comes to non-competes, but there are defenses to non-compete. So it's not hopeless. You just have to have a good war chest. I mean, that's the problem, is employers sue employees and know that employees can't afford to defend themselves. So unless your new employer is willing to pay for those legal fees, frequently you can't afford to defend yourself. What happens more often is the old employer sends a letter to the new employer and says, hello, new employer, your new employee has a non-compete agreement, and we're going to sue you and your mother and your dog and everybody you ever met unless you fire that person, and you're just going to get fired. And the new employer is going to say, come back when you're free, and they don't want to be in the middle of it, and then you're going to be fighting from a position of being unemployed. It's very tough out there.
But is it also possible that in your application packet there's a non-compete agreement there that you have to sign, and if you don't sign, you're not hired?
Yeah, I mean, and even more common is they don't tell you you're going to have to sign a non-compete. You leave another job, and then on your first or day or second day with a giant stack of papers they give you, there's a non-compete agreement in there. It could be disguised as something called a confidentiality agreement or something else. It could be just some language that you didn't even read and didn't even know you signed, and you're just signing all these papers that they shove in front of you. You got to read all that stuff because it could have a non-compete agreement. Once you've left your other job and have a new job, it's very hard to say no because you're between a rock and a hard place. They can say sign or be fired in Florida. Florida is one of the few states that allows that to happen. Yes, the law should change, but it's not going to change anytime soon.
Go over for us a little bit about what rights workers have in Florida, as opposed to, say, their federal rights against discrimination in various forms.
Florida doesn't have a lot of laws protecting employees. However, there are some. For instance, Florida discrimination law specifically protects you against marital status discrimination. So you can't be discriminated against because you are married or divorced or whatever. Now, who you're married to is another
or single
thing. Nepotism. Mm-hmm. Not illegal, but yes, you can't be discriminated against due to your marital status. There are some county ordinances. For instance, Broward and Dade County do have ordinances that protect you against discrimination based on sexual orientation. Broward County has an ordinance that protects you against political affiliation discrimination. So depending on what county you live in, there are some protections that you can have. Florida does have a law protecting you against discrimination for being involved in a domestic violence situation. They can't fire you for time you miss from work to go to court to get an injunction or to deal with other domestic violence
issues.
If
that spouse shows up on your workplace and creates a scene or something like that.
Well, that's a whole other issue, that's something that, you know, employers do fire people for for your spouse's behavior. And in fact, people get fired for their spouse's behavior a lot. And the truth is that in Florida, they can fire you for any reason or no reason at all. They don't have to have a reason unless it's an illegal reason, such as discrimination or whistleblowing or something like that.
Sometimes when I tell friends what you've said numerous times on this program, that actually by statute in the state of Florida, that you don't even have a right really to use the restroom.
Yeah.
There's no clear cut.
Yeah. There's no requirement of any breaks in Florida other than for minors who are employees. OSHA laws, the federal law on employee safety, there's certainly an argument to be had that OSHA laws, since it does require providing accessible restrooms, the implication would be that it also requires bathroom breaks. But we actually, one of the early shows I did, we were talking about that, and I said, well, you could argue OSHA. And somebody called from OSHA, and they said, oh, no, we wouldn't enforce that.
To have the facilities, but you don't have the right to use them. Is that what they're saying?
According to the person who called from OSHA when we first did the show a few years ago, that was one of the earliest shows we did. And I was a little surprised because I've had people in other states tell me that their OSHAs do enforce.
Okay, let's move along. Our next caller, we've got Annie. Annie in Fort Lauderdale. Hi there. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I was calling, I guess, to kind of piggyback off what you guys started is, like, you kind of answered my question. As a non-exempt employee, I wanted to know if I was entitled to 15-minute breaks throughout my 8-hour day. I know I do get my hour lunch, and I was always under the impression that I received 2 15-minute breaks.
Nope. No, there's no law in Florida that requires any breaks. Now, sometimes people get that impression because of union contracts, so a lot of union contracts do require breaks, but there's no law in Florida requiring any breaks. Now, if you take a short break, less than 20 minutes, they're not supposed to dock you for that time, mm-hmm. But for an hour-long lunch break, they should be able to dock you for that time. However, if they make you if they automatically dock it and you're still working through lunch, that's improper. So there's a lot of things about breaks that employers get wrong, but that's one of the big things that employees get wrong. I want my 15-minute break. I know I'm entitled to my 15-minute break. Well, no, you're not, and you're fired. That's the answer. There's no law about any kind of breaks.
And is that a recent change, or that's always been the norm?
Always been the case.
Okay. My second question was in reference to healthcare. So I just started with this employer, and I decided to go with the healthcare, which is covered at the company at 100%. However, it's really being deducted from my paycheck because it was either such amount without healthcare or the deduction of the healthcare, and then that would be my yearly salary. And I'm thinking that, you know, and it's expensive. It's about $7,000 a month, I mean a year. And so I'm thinking that I'm going to remove it because I need the finances when we have open enrollment. What would be my best bet in that sense from now until I believe it's November or so? Should I be going on the health marketplace to see what my options are?
Well, I would definitely do my research before I drop my coverage because you need to find out, can you switch to Affordable Care Act? Is it more affordable?
Uh-huh.
And then what we really don't know is going to happen is what's going to happen when Affordable Care Act is repealed or in some ways.
There isn't any kind of time frame.
Yeah, we don't know.
That's one of the main reasons why I selected healthcare, because it's so uncertain at this time.
Yeah. We don't know what the insurance companies are going to do. Are rates going to go sky high? Possibly. So we don't know. So your employer plan is probably still your safest plan. But definitely do your research. And, you know, there are also non-Affordable Care Act plans that are out there, private plans that you can look at. So do your research and find out what your coverage is. But don't lose coverage, especially if you have a pre-existing condition.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. It's Topical Currents at your service. We're going to take a short break and be back with more. And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman should be back with us tomorrow. And we're speaking with Donna Ballman. She's a Fort Lauderdale-based attorney who represents employees in many areas. And we're taking your calls, of course. We're at your service. 1-800-743-9576. Also, emails, please keep them short. I don't have any in my inbox now. That email address is radio@wlrn.org. radio@wlrn.org. Next up, we have Chris. Chris in Sunrise.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, my son works for a movie theater, and they claim that they're not responsible for paying him time and a half because he's in the what quote unquote entertainment industry. Didn't sound right to me, and I wanted to see what you guys thought.
You know, there are some movie theater exemptions, believe it or not. My suggestion would be to talk to somebody who really specializes in the Fair Labor Standards Act. There are attorneys that do just straight wage hour stuff, and they can help you with the ins and outs of that. You know, that the movie theater exemption is one of those weird parts of the labor law. So there may be some ways around it. It's possible they're right, but it's also possible they're getting it wrong.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for your call. Here's an emailer, Ann. I was an exempt salaried employee at a company that deducted 4.5 hours from me when I left in the afternoon for a vacation. The reasoning was that I didn't have enough PTO accumulated. I argued that this was illegal since I was an exempt salaried employee. I contacted them after I left and never heard back from them. This was over 4 years ago. Can I still make a claim?
It's too late. You waited too long. You can go back 2 years in most circumstances, 3 years in some circumstances, 4 years is going to be too late, unless you had a written contract saying otherwise. But you don't want to wait on those wage hour claims because 2 years is the norm for that. But if they are docking you for time that you miss partial days, then they could be losing that exemption. So it would have been possible that not only could you go after them for that those 4.5 hours that they took, but also possibly for any other weeks that you worked 40 hours or more, there could be an argument that they lost that exemption. There are some cure provisions, and it's complicated. But once they start improperly docking you, they could lose that exemption.
Let's talk about wage theft a little bit then. What about people who are in the catch-22 where their employer expects them to work extra hours on a certain project to stay late, and yet if they're late by 15 minutes in the morning, They're right there to dock them 15 minutes or a half an hour, and yet they're actually working overtime without being compensated for it. However, if they raise the issue, they're likely to be fired.
Yeah, it's illegal. So if you think that your employer is improperly docking you or not paying you for, they're supposed to pay for in almost all circumstances, a time and a half for any hours that you work over 40 hours. There are lots of loopholes and
exemptions. Or past 8 hours during the day.
Well, no, it's 40 hours per week. So more than 40 hours per week. So it's not 80 hours per 2 weeks. A lot of employers try to do that.
But if you work 12 hours on one day, they could short you on the other days.
They can tell you to take extra, take time off the next day.
Right.
Yeah, that's allowed. But saying, oh, take time off next week, no.
Which is like giving you comp time.
That's comp time. That's not allowed. But time off the next day, that's allowed. So it has to be in the same week. So it's 40 hours per week. In general, there are exemptions to overtime, but just because you're salaried doesn't make you exempt. So these wage hour things are very complicated. So you can talk to the Department of Labor if you can get somebody on the phone. But DOL.gov actually has a lot of fact sheets and interactive things that you can do to find out if you think your employer is getting it wrong. You can do some of your own research and then talk to an employee side employment lawyer who does a lot of that wage hour stuff. There are, it's a very complicated law. It's not easy, and it's not obvious, but a lot of employers are getting this stuff wrong.
What is PTO that's being referred
paid
to?
Time off.
Okay.
So paid is sometimes employers lump sick and vacation time into just a general PTO bank that you get both paid time off and vacation time off for sick and vacation. Sometimes it's PTO and vacation. So sometimes they just treat sick as PTO. So it depends on what the employer means by it, but it means paid time off.
Our next emailer says, as an exempt employee, am I required to record PTO for partial days off?
Employers can make you and dock your PTO bank, absolutely, if you're exempt. So you can record it. What they can't do is dock your pay. So they can dock your PTO bank, but not your pay.
She says, what if my PTO is negative?
Then they're not allowed to dock your pay. So, that's if you're sick, they still can't dock you for those partial days. Or if you need to go to a doctor's appointment, whatever, they can't dock you for those partial days.
So
if you're exempt. Well, they can certainly fire you for excessive absenteeism. That's the downside. But, there's also disability discrimination. You can ask if you have a disability and you need extra doctor's appointments beyond your PTO.
Or can you carry those days into another fiscal year? Or?
Most employers say no now. There's a lot of problems with PTO and PTO banks, and employers can just say, oops, no, sorry, you're no longer allowing you to carry it over. You've been carrying 1,000 hours, for 30 years, and now it's all gone. They're allowed to do that, unfortunately, under many circumstances. But I would say that for absenteeism, things like the Americans with Disabilities Act, if you have a disability, family and medical leave, you could, if they have at least 50 employees and you've been there at least a year, then odds are you could qualify for intermittent family and medical leave. So there are some things that can protect you.
Here's one. What about breastfeeding rights for women in the workplace? And for pumping, where to pump and break time for it.
Well, that law that protects employees if they are breastfeeding, that allows them to have a private room to pump, and it can't be a restroom, and there are all kinds of requirements on it. That's part of the Affordable Care Act. So people, if that gets repealed in its entirety, may lose the protection for being able to breast pump at work. Right now, they have to give you breaks, reasonable breaks to pump. They have to give you a private place. They can't fire you for needing that.
And we move along to more calls. We've got Anthony in Pompano. Anthony, you're up.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was so intensely listening to the show. I'm sorry. yes, this is Anthony from Pompano. And, I worked at an Italian bistro in Pompano. And, it was a mom-pa organization, as a husband and wife. And they're just, treating employees, like calling them names and so forth. I had a disability with a severe limp. They used to call me Forrest Gump. They'd give me a limited amount of tables. They said they're not going to give me any more tables until I walk normal. I know this state is pro-employer as opposed to employee. They can fire you for anything, but I mean, you know, do people have to be treated that way in the workplace?
Well, for small employers, they can get away with a lot. However, in Dade and Broward, there are ordinances that protect employees against discrimination, such as disability discrimination, if the employer has at least 5 employees. So for 5 or more employees, organizations that have that, you are protected against discrimination. On the federal and state level, you're protected if your employer has at least 15 employees. But 5 for Broward and Dade. So for employers that are smaller than that, there's very little protection for you. So there are very few laws that protect against any discrimination for employers that have 4 or fewer employees.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. He's an emailer. He says he's a Canadian and American passport holder. Your opinion about leaving the U.S. for Canada because of health insurance. He was an employee for 20 years with an employer-sponsored health care, but at least recently is self-employed and can't keep up with his insurance.
Well, if you can get free coverage, go for it. I think that
what kind of residency requirements?
Yeah, there are some. You know, there are some people that have benefits in other countries, but you have to look and make sure there's no residency requirement or whatever. But yeah, if you can get free coverage, elsewhere, obviously go for it. Sometimes people do this mail order prescriptions from Canada, and that's actually illegal. But getting crossing the border and getting health care coverage because you're entitled to it, not illegal. So go for it.
Let's take one more call here. Let's see. We got Ed in Miami. Miami, Ed, you're up. Hi.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for this conversation. Really good follow-up to Terry Gross's program, too. I'm a sales rep here in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. My company is based out of state, and I'm really kind of curious how that falls, since I'm the only employee here in the South Florida area. How that bounces up and what my rights are. Is it based on my company out of state, or is it based on me here in this area?
Well, Florida law probably applies to most of your employment situation. You are a Florida employee, so things like, you know, unemployment compensation and discrimination and stuff like that probably goes under Florida law. But there may be some arguments, depending if you have an employment contract saying otherwise, or depending on state law in other states, there could be some argument that you are covered under other states' laws, and that could be a benefit. For instance, employers always tremble in their boots if you tell them that California law applies, because that's a very pro-employee state, same with Massachusetts. So if there's some argument that you're under some law from another state, then you may want to look into that and talk to an employment lawyer in that state to try to get advice to see if you're covered.
Would that be something that I would have to follow up in my own contract to look and see, or is that something that it would be on county ordinances written into the state statutes and codes?
Well, if you have a contract, then look towards the end, and it'll probably say what state law applies to your contract. But also, if the employer is based in another state, sometimes those state laws on discrimination and other things apply to all employees of a corporation in that state, whether or not they work in that state, but you have to talk to an employment lawyer in that state. So the website that I tell people to go to for any kind of employment law issue, but certainly for anything outside of Florida, is exchange.nela, that's N-E-L-A, .org/findalawyer, all one word. That's the National Employment Lawyers Association website, so NELA.org. And that's the employee-side employment lawyers in every state in the union. So you can search by geographic area and try to find an employee-side lawyer. You don't want to accidentally pick up the phone and call your employer's lawyer.
Okay, thanks for your call.
So much. Interesting.
You're very welcome.
You.
Okay, good luck. Let's take a short break on our program. We'll be back with more. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, 49 minutes past 1 o'clock. speaking with Donna Baldwin. She's a Fort Lauderdale-based attorney who represents employees. Let's go to another emailer. This is kind of interesting. I work at a restaurant. We're busy from the moment I get in. They make me sign out for a 30-minute lunch break, but we never actually get to take it because we have to go back to work. What should I do?
Well, talk to the Department of Labor, talk to an employment attorney, because that's improper docking. They have to pay you. If you're getting docked for a break that you didn't take, they should be paying for that.
Can you stay anonymous when you do that?
No. I mean, that's part of the...
Well, considering there's maybe, you know, 10 or 14 people working there, yeah, getting the same treatment.
It is illegal for them to retaliate against you for complaining about unpaid wages. That doesn't mean they won't retaliate, but it is illegal. So you could be protected under the Fair Labor Standards Act for
subtle ways to retaliate, of course.
Well, there are. The Florida Whistleblower Act is actually a nice pro-employee law that Florida has, which protects you against retaliation for objecting to or refusing to participate in any illegal activity by your employer.
Okay, good luck. Next up on the phone, we've got Jacques in Fort Lauderdale. You're up, Jacques. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I got injured on the job, and is the employer accommodate me by letting me light duty because of the fact that, you know, my condition requires it, but and workman comp denied me, I mean, like, to do surgery to repair, I mean, like, the damage that was done to my knee. So I want to know, if can I get fired after that? I mean, after a while, if, like, you know, this thing cannot come to a resolution.
Well, you can't be fired for making a workers' comp claim, whether or not it's denied. But if you can't perform the duties of your job, the Americans with Disabilities Act may or may not protect you. So if you can do your job with some reasonable accommodations, like I need to be able to use a cane, or I need to be able to take regular breaks and sit, then that could be a reasonable accommodation. But if you say, I just can't do the job, I need light duty, I need a different job, they could argue that that's not a reasonable accommodation. But it sounds like they're accommodating you right now with a light duty job, so it's going to be hard for them to say, oh, it's some sort of undue hardship to accommodate you in that way when they're already granting the accommodation. So, you know, yes, it happens all the time that people do get fired for making workers' comp claims and for needing accommodations, but it's frequently illegal.
But I didn't ask. I mean, like, it's just like, you know, the accommodation they give me is not the indication of my job. My job, I mean, like, is totally different from that field, you know, and I'm just, they just, we, the doctor requires it because of the fact, standing up, I cannot do any job standing up. It's got to be seated down only, and my job is my regular job is mostly standing up. So I want to know, I mean, like, you know, if, like, you know, let's say workman comp continue to deny me to have a surgery to repair my knee, it's a meniscus tear. Are they going to fire me for that?
Well, I guess that, you know, you need to talk to your doctor about what kind of other accommodations could be granted. You know, if you can perform your job duties using a chair, they just don't normally provide it, then a chair might be reasonable. Breaks might be reasonable. There are devices. I see people on those little scooters where they've got their one leg up on a scooter and they're walking around on the, you know, with their knee on a scooter. And you know, so there could be some accommodations that your doctor could talk to you about. What the employer is supposed to do is something called the interactive process with your doctor and you to figure out what a reasonable accommodation is. If they say that it's an undue hardship, most employers don't bother. But that's illegal in itself. They're supposed to help determine what is a reasonable accommodation. If they say something is a hardship, ultimately they're supposed to work with you to try to find something else that works before they just fire you. But I would start talking to the doctor now and see, well, wait a minute, you know, what if I don't get better? What other kinds of accommodations can I request besides light duty?
Here's another emailer. This is a common problem. I labor at my employer's workplace, use its materials, and adhere to its schedule, yet I'm considered an independent contractor, and they release the employer from covering its half of my Social Security payment? What's the remedy?
Ah, there's a handy-dandy form called the SS-8 form. The IRS has it.
SS-8.
SS-8. And you fill it out, and it has a list of questions, and you send it in, and the IRS can determine whether the employer got it wrong or not. So if you think that you're not supposed to be an independent contractor, you think the employer is supposed to be paying its share of employment taxes, you could sic the IRS on them with the handy-dandy SS-8 form.
And that business that they're force him to adhere to its schedule is kind of a key factor there.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're truly an independent contractor, you can kind of set your own hours, or you might have deadlines. But
yeah, I mean, you know, there could be. I mean, obviously, like say I'm, you know, I'm an independent contractor, but my independent contract is to do this radio show, and it's on a set time. There could be reasons why you have to do a specific time, but you know, they can't tell you when you can take vacations. They can't tell you when you have to get your script in or whatever. They're you know, they can tell you this is the job and here's your deadline to do it, but they can't require you to jump through their hoops. You're supposed to be providing your own materials. So the more control they have over you, the more likely it is that you are not an independent contractor. So, you know, if they start doing evaluations and requiring you to ask permission for time off and things like that, then that's a red flag and you're probably not a contractor.
We only have a little bit of time left, Donna, but touch on applicant salary history. Is it fair to ask me how much I made at my last job when I apply for a new one?
Well, it's not fair, and a lot of states are cracking down on that.
Is it legal?
It's a movement. It is legal in Florida. There are several states that have made it illegal, and it's a movement that's starting to move. It's mostly in the Northeast right now, but there are several states that are attempting to make it illegal. Asking about salary history, the problem with that is that it locks in prior discrimination. So particularly for women who are traditionally underpaid, it can lock in discrimination. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has just ruled that basing salary on applicants' prior salary at another employer is not illegal sex discrimination, even though if it has an impact of paying women less. So the purpose of these laws that are trying to prevent employers from asking about salary history is to try to eliminate that locked-in discrimination. You should be paying based on what you pay at your corporation and not what prior corporations that may have engaged in discrimination were paying.
Or the employer may be using the tact of finding out that you made $48,000 last year and offering you $49,000 or whatever the scale may be.
Exactly. So, you know, and that employer doesn't know what happened at the prior employment. So if they are locking in sex discrimination, race discrimination, whatever it is, then it's just a bad practice, I think. A lot of employees are offended by that question, and so you're going to lose some good applicants who don't want to answer that question. A lot of people think it's none of the employer's business.
Any chance of that being made illegal in Florida?
No. Well, not for a long time, anyhow.
Well, thanks for being so frank. We certainly want to thank you, Donna Baldwin. She's also the author of the book Stand Up for Your Rights Without Getting Fired. She's a Fort Lauderdale-based attorney. She represents employees in many areas of employment law. Donna, as always, thank you very much. I also want to apologize to those callers we couldn't get to, Doug, Stephen, Howard, Jeff, and Lana. We tried our best. Donna, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And we hope you're happy on the job today. We thank you for tuning in this afternoon to our At Your Service edition. Our lead producer, Richard Ives. Technical direction from online content producer, Jason Zapka. And Polly Landis is associate producer. And as always, it's easy to find free audio archives of each program at our website, that's WLRN.org. You might have a friend or relative who'd like to hear today's At Your Service program. Also, we have more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page, and you can listen to the iTunes podcast. Our theme music is created by Michael Levine, And tomorrow's program begins with info about the Miami Shores People of Color organization and its Unity 360 Race Dialogue series. Also, Linda Gastenheimer and National Ice Cream Month, organic milk gelato from a Coconut Grove artisanal shop. Joseph Cooper for Topical Currents. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.